now is 7:49. It's time now to find out how the markets are doing.
Hey, good morning, America.
Well, we've got a pretty quiet morning going on, but
Dow Jones down 72 points. The Nasdaq.
The customers were
that's not me.
Made with the same quality and care.
The low 60s. Go out and make it a great day.
Get an update on your morning commutes with
financing for a quality use.
Surrender yourself to the Lord. The
airline stocks are actually rallying a bit this morning.
Hello, everyone. This is Smiles Lewis, and you're tuned in to another live edition of Anomaly Radio, live from Austin, Texas. It's September 11th, 2013. So, yeah, transmitting to you live from Austin, Texas. The heart of the resistance. Can you believe it? It's been 12 years. It's one of those events causing people to say, hey, do you remember where you were? Every year. A dozen years later. Well, I'll be talking a little bit about September 11th and why I do think there is a good reason to be suspicious of the official story. Information that might cause one to consider yourself to be a 9/11 truther. That's a four-letter word now, isn't it? Buggy labels. But I'm also just going to play some music throughout the hour, but stay tuned, and I'll have more to say in just a few moments.
is probably the worst instant human toll of any crime, and that may be true. But there are terrorist crimes with effects a bit more drawn out that are much more extreme. Nevertheless, it's historic that, because there was a change. The change was the direction in which the guns were pointed. During these close to 200 years, the United States expelled or mostly exterminated indigenous populations. Many conquered half of Mexico, carried out depredations all over the region, Central America, sometimes beyond. Conquered in Hawaii and the Philippines, killing several hundred thousand Filipinos in the process. Since the Second World War, it's extended its reach around the world in ways I don't have to describe, but it was always killing someone else. The fighting was somewhere else. It was others who were getting slaughtered, not here.
Thank you so much for joining us on this somber anniversary. That is my 9/11 mystery song. Anybody out there know what song that is or what band that is? I believe almost 10 years ago, I was tuned into probably Kill Radio, ready to tune into Greg Bishop's Radio Misterioso radio show, I think. And I think it may have even been on an anniversary of 9/11, if memory serves. And this was out back in the day. And I remember that song, I was recording it. At some point, I finally recorded it because I was tuned in and waiting for his show to start. And it just kept playing over and over and over. It was like somebody at the Kill Radio station out in LA had just put it on repeat, and it was playing over and over and over again. Of course, folks will probably recognize the voice of Noam Chomsky, who of course is a darling to the left leaning conspiracy crowd. And I've always found that to be a very moving piece, and so I decided to open tonight's show with that. And so if you have any information about that song, you should email me at music@anomalyradio.com or miles@anomalyradio.com. Or if you know my personal email address, send it there. Be very curious to find out who that is and where that song came from. You know, it's I call it the mystery song. Well, and that reminds me of one of the many, there's so many aspects of the day, September 11th, 2001, that have been rabbit holes for people wanting to investigate and pull apart the many threads of that mystery, because I think in a lot of ways it is still a mystery as to what exactly happened that day. I know, obviously, there's a lot of belief in what allegedly happened that day, and I'm not saying that I entertain all possibilities when it comes to some of the wilder claims, but one of the things that you might recall, if you have steeped yourself in the 9/11 skepticism scene, is the 9/11 mystery plane. Do you remember that? That strange plane that was flying around? I remember an article back in, almost around this time, 2007, new details about the 9/11 mystery plane. The morning of 9/11, CNN reported a mystery jet plane flying above Washington, D.C. at 9:54 a.m. Correspondent John King, who was standing near the White House, reported that about 10 minutes earlier, hence around 9:44 a.m., there was a, quote, white jet circling overhead, he added. Now, you generally don't see planes in the area over the White House. That is restricted airspace. No reason to believe that this jet was there for any nefarious purposes, but the Secret Service was very concerned, pointing up at the jet in the sky. It is out of sight now, but we can't, best we can tell. Shortly after, another CNN correspondent, Kate Snow, also reported having seen a plane circling over the Capitol building at around the same time. She said, now whether that may have been an Air Force plane, it's unclear, but that seemed to be the reason, according to security guards that I talked with, towards the evacuation of the Capitol. So, in fact, there has been a book published on that subject, the 9/11 mystery plane. So, it's not been one of the areas that I've focused on, but it came to mind when I titled that introductory song, the 9/11 mystery song. Somebody out there knows what that song is, so let me know. But, you know, I'm recalling now, I only recently discovered that the home I was living in at the time, I was renting a ramshackle old house in South Central Austin in the 78704 zip code I lived in for many years and had a lot of great experiences in. And that was the place I was living when I was planning the 38th National UFO Conference, which was canceled due to the events of September 11th. And I just recently discovered that that house isn't there anymore. It's bulldozed. It probably was worthy of being bulldozed. It wasn't very well built, but it's kind of a strange feeling. I don't believe there's any other home that I've lived in the past that has been erased. And that was the place where I first heard about September 11th that morning. And as many people who are fans of the show, this radio network, or my work are aware, I had been organizing the previously mentioned 38th annual National UFO Conference that was going to be here in Austin, Texas, at the then sole original Alamo Drafthouse Cinema in downtown Austin. It was going to be a 3-day, 3-night affair with a wide variety of speakers and movies and musicians performing and presenting, and it was going to be fantastic. We were going to present a Lifetime Achievement Award to the one, the only, Robert Anton Wilson, the self-professed head of the Global Illuminati. And according to some conspiracy theorists and parapolitical researchers, it was the Illuminati who were behind the New World Order's plan to take down those towers and rain down that horrible terror that day. But from the ashes of that event, my friend Russell Dowden and I started the Austin Para-Times newspaper. And in one of the first editorials for one of the first issues of that newspaper, it was more of a news magazine, really, I ran a editorial that kind of summed up my feelings about this, about the events of 9/11, both from a paranormal and parapolitical perspective. And another good friend, Gabo de la Guerra, actually several years later, many years later, ran the audio version that I recorded years later on Co-op Radio. So it actually aired on radio, the audio version of that. And I'm going to go ahead and air that again right now. This is an excerpt from the very first ever 9/11 podcast, which was a brief series that I started shortly after the phrase and phenomenon of podcasting came to be. And it still sums up a lot of my feelings, so I will go to that now. Waking up in a nightmare matrix. I awoke that morning much earlier than usual. I had a lot to do in preparation for the National UFO Conference that I was hosting later that week at the Alamo Draft House. I turned on the propaganda channel, CNN, as usual. I was greeted by the greedy image of America's wealth burning. The North Tower was smoking. I was shocked, but not surprised. I went into the kitchen and started brewing some Java. Then I heard a scream from the TV. Oh my God, not another one! I ran back into the living room, just in time for the instant replay. A second plane had deliberately struck the South Tower. And then I knew. The war has begun. I'd just been a witness to America's greatest Reichstag event. I knew right then and there that America was totally screwed, that our freedoms were about to evaporate, that our Constitution was about to be eviscerated, that the ruling elite had finally decided to, bam, kick it up a notch. I sat down, dazed but not confused. I watched in horror and awe as the events continued to unfold. My phone began ringing off the wall. My network of parapolitical reporters were all checking in. We all knew what this meant. We'd all read the recently declassified Operation Northwoods documents, wherein the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in 1962, plotted to blow up American Airlines, bomb Washington, and kill U.S. citizens, all as a pretext for invading Cuba. We all knew that the FBI had instigated the original 1993 attempt at taking down the World Trade Center. We all knew that Tim McVeigh wasn't the real bomber of the Oklahoma City Murrah Federal Building in 95. We all knew something was about to happen, as we had been warned by the likes of David Shippers and Alex Jones months before the attacks of 9/11. Not only that, but another conspiratorially minded acquaintance of mine had, in the weeks leading up to 9/11, warned me that, quote, something big, something earth-shattering will happen between September 17th and September 20th. He didn't know what, and he didn't know exactly when, but he did know. His warnings were based on various prophecies, as well as the general intel that was circulating in the weeks prior. Everybody knew. The CIA, the FBI, the Bush administration, Putin and the KGB, Israeli Mossad, the French, the Germans, the Brits, everyone knew this was coming. Evidence goes back to the Philippines in 1995, so why the hell wasn't it stopped? And then the towers fell like the falling hammers of fascism that continue to fall each and every day since 9/11. The towers, seemingly for no reason whatsoever, came crashing down in the surreal maelstrom of death's debris. Among the thousands killed in the collapse was John P. O'Neill, a former deputy director of the FBI who had, just 2 weeks prior to the attacks, allegedly quit in disgust over the Bush administration's apparent obstruction of his investigations of certain al-Qaeda terrorist suspects. In the new book, Hidden Truth, from intelligence analysts Charles Brissard and Guillaume Dasky, O'Neill is purported to have told the authors, quote, the main obstacles to investigate Islamic terrorism were U.S. oil corporate interests and the role played by Saudi Arabia in it. It's unclear what exactly happened to O'Neill that fateful day, but the reason he was in the World Trade Centers in the first place was his new post-FBI job was head of security at the World Trade Center. John O'Neill died the first day of his new job. The tragedy of that Tuesday's attacks weighed heavy on my mind. I was forced to completely cancel the 38th National UFO Conference I'd been working so hard towards the previous year. There was no way to continue with the event. The 20-plus speakers flying in from around the United States and Britain weren't going anywhere. The airports were all closed. Besides, how on earth would people be able to get caught up in such a subject as UFOs in the midst of so much suffering? the irony of this was a phone call we'd taken the previous week when I'd appeared on Jeff Contreras' Therefore I Am cable access show. How can you guys talk about such trivial matters as the existence of UFOs when there are paramilitary actions being perpetrated against innocent civilians around the world? To which we responded, that's a vital area of importance that we do cover. We don't research one topic within a vacuum, or words to that effect. Ripples in the collective unconscious. Within the next few days, a number of my friends would report the clairvoyant precognitive dreams they'd had prior to waking up to the terrors of that morning. One friend described a dream in which he was wandering around inside a skyscraper with a friend of his whom he associates with New York City because they met in film school there. They came to a room filled with mourning Middle Eastern people. He knew that whatever had happened, they were being falsely accused. A woman approached them and asked them to please leave as they wanted privacy while mourning. He then woke up and later learned of the attacks. Another friend had a dream of being atop a skyscraper and being forced to jump. He told himself that, if I believe the ground is water, then I won't be killed by the impact. He jumped and found himself submerged in the muddy bottom under the water, unable to get free, struggling to breathe. Neither of these friends consider themselves psychic. Another friend of mine does have a history of prophetic dreams, and this time was no different. On September 9th, he had a dream replete with imagery of the coming attacks. Buildings crumbling, dust clouds billowing down upon him, being covered in gray ash. He interprets that night's dreams to mean that both sides of these events, the Western world and the Middle Eastern world, are both conspiring to actualize the apocalypse of the Bible. He also sees the result in America for what it is, a fascist takeover. You can read his complete dream and interpret it yourself at elphys.net/dt/jlsleepoftowers.htm. But perhaps the most impressive evidence for prophetic foreknowledge on the part of humanity as a whole was the massive deviation from randomness recorded by random event generators around the world before the first plane even hit the North Tower. For the past few years, a number of the world's leading parapsychologists have been collecting data around the world to determine if human attention, i.e. consciousness, affects randomness, as created by state-of-the-art random number generators. A local host of one of the global REGs, Gary Heseltine, spoke recently to the Austin Ions group at the Austin History Center. He spoke of the difficulties inherent in scientifically examining this startling data, but implores others to examine the data and help to create future experiments. You can look at all the data at newosphere.princeton.edu/terror.html. That's newosphere, newosphere.princeton.edu. There were many other strange prophecies associated with the September 11th attacks. Several different CD album covers produced before the attacks from America to Germany to Australia featured images of airplanes and or explosions associated with the World Trade Center skyline, as did a Middle Eastern calendar. Also, a Wisconsin preacher had a vision of the New York City skyline ablaze while visiting there on July 6, 2001. He published his vision online and in his print newsletter, which you can read at lasttrumpetministries.org. Also, a Lone Gunman TV episode aired months before 9/11, in which an airliner hijacked by remote control is used to try and fly the plane into the World Trade Centers. Do a search online. You can watch the episode. And Mark Allen has a Freudian dream September 7th. The dreamer is among a group of agents within a birth canal. The dream eventually switches to more literal references to the approaching tragedy. Quote, then I seem to be in another reality, another New York City that looks nothing like New York City. It is sunny in daytime. There is one point where I am trying to do something secret under this grassy highway underpass. I am trying to make these drawings on paper or something, and there is a sidewalk near me, and this line of school children, who all have really strange hairstyles, are walking along it. I don't want them to see me for some reason. Then I'm walking down the street, and suddenly I hear people screaming and saying stuff like, it's a really big accident, and oh my God, and I run to the intersection and look down the street. The next intersection seems to drop off into the Hudson River, so I must be somewhere on the Upper East Side, and I see this gigantic concrete cone thing that has tiered steps like a pyramid, but it's a cone. It is spinning slowly, and as it does, I see a bunch of people getting kind of dumped onto it from above somewhere. Some of the people are dead already, and others are screaming and trying to get off the cone and getting crushed. It's really a major deal and really horrific. My adrenaline rushes and I grab my cell phone and dial 911. As I am thinking, a lot of people are probably calling 911 from their cells, but I'm going to call anyway. I'm wondering if 911 waits to hear a certain amount of calls on major disasters before they know if it's a hoax or not, because really, that is the first they would hear about it, and if it was just one call, it might be a prank. I am stuttering and choking on tears as I talk to the 911 operator because it's such an intense, scary moment. After I hang up the phone, after giving the operator the information, I look up and see the disaster is just getting worse. Whole 18-wheeler trucks and cars with people in them are getting dumped onto the cone, and everyone is getting crushed, and people are screaming, and it's awful. This dream is archived at Mark Allen's website, markallencam.com/dreamjournalsseptember2.html. So what's the point? Pay attention to your dreams. They are our most direct connection to the source and one another. You can share the dream environment with others. I know. I've experienced mutual dreaming and dream switching. More on that next time.
Yeah, so that was part of the very first 9/11 podcast that I ever produced. And that was an audio reading of the editorial that I wrote for one of the first issues of the Austin Para-Times, which came about because of the events of September 11th. Now, from a deep politics, parapolitical perspective, to me, there's no doubt that there are the fingerprints of empire and the military-industrial complex and certain key players in it. And while I wouldn't go so far as to say I think it's a slam dunk that it was the Bush administration, there, of course, have been plenty of efforts made to pin it on them. But for me, it always comes down to the foreknowledge and, at the very least, the fact that the attacks should have been prevented because there was so much evidence pointing to their imminence. And at the very least, the people who either accidentally let it happen or perhaps made it happen should have been brought to justice. You don't allow something as horrible as this to happen on your watch and not be held accountable. But of course, apparently in the United States, you do get away with it. But one of the best resources out there, of course, is Paul Thompson's official 9/11 timeline, which is just an amazing database filled with information, all from mainstream news sources and citations from various verifiable sources and books and reference materials. And they have tons of information on all the intelligence that was being given to the United States. In late 2000, British investigators teamed up with their counterparts in the Cayman Islands and began a year-long probe of three Afghan men who had entered the Cayman Islands illegally. In June 2001, the Afghan men were overheard discussing hijacking attacks in the New York City and were promptly taken into custody. This information was forwarded to U.S. intelligence in late August 2001, shortly before the attacks. An anonymous letter to a Cayman radio station alleged these same men were Al-Qaeda agents organizing a major terrorist attack against the U.S. via an airline or airlines. There's at least five mainstream news sources citing that particular report. We've got reports from Afghanistan, Argentina, Morocco, Egypt, British intelligence, German intelligence, Egyptian intelligence, Jordan intelligence, President Vladimir Putin, you know, Israel, Mossad, and on and on and on. As I mentioned, yeah, Afghanistan, Argentina, Britain, Cayman Islands, Egypt, France, Germany, Israel, Italy, Jordan, Morocco, and Russia, among the many, many places intelligence was flowing from. And, of course, the infamous Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. that went to the president. There's a whole list of briefings that should have alerted the presidency to this, but of course, if you subscribe to the idea that the Project for a New American Century and the neocons were just looking for some sort of event like this to catalyze their war machine so that they could profit immensely and could forward their own hegemonic agenda of empire and military contracts, then why? What benefit would it have been for them to stop such attacks? But one of my favorite lists of coincidences, synchronicities surrounding these attacks, of course, was written by one of the most excellent bloggers out there, Jeff Wells. This is an infamous and well-read, well-written and well-researched conspiracy theorist guide to 9/11, which was written back in 2004. Originally, I think he may have even written it as far back as 2003. But it's just a long list of all the amazing coincidences that you have to believe in order to accept the mainstream media and government's conspiracy theory about the events of those days and the events that led up to them. And among the many interesting tidbits from this coincidence theorist guide to 9/11 by Jeff Wells is that you have to believe George Bush's brother, Marvin, sat on the board of the Kuwaiti-owned company, which provided electronic security to the World Trade Center, Dulles Airport, and United Airlines. That means nothing more than you must admit those Bush boys have done all right for themselves. Or that Al-Qaeda was active in the Balkan conflict, fighting on the same side as the U.S. as recently as 1999, while the U.S. protected its cells, is merely one of history's little aberrations. Of course, we've recently seen over and over how now we're funding Al-Qaeda in other countries, like Syria. So the beat goes on there. The claims of Michael Springman, State Department veteran of the Jeddah Visa Bureau, that the CIA ran the office and issued visas to Al-Qaeda members so they could receive training in the United States. Some sound like the sour grapes of someone who was fired for making such wild accusations. That the company PTEC, founded by a Saudi financier, placed on America's terrorist watch list in October 2001, had access to the FAA's entire computer system for 2 years before the 9/11 attack, means he must not have been such a threat after all. That the standing order, which covered the shoot-down of hijacked aircraft, was altered on June 1, 2001, taking discretion away from field commanders and placing it solely in the hands of the Secretary of Defense, is simply poor planning and unfortunate timing. Fortunately, the error has been corrected, as the order was rescinded shortly after 9/11. That in the weeks before 9/11, FBI agent Colleen Rowley found her investigation of Zacharias Moussaoui so perversely thwarted that her colleagues joked that bin Laden had a mole at the FBI, proves the stress-relieving virtue of humor in the workplace. And on and on and on. This is a really, I can't recommend this list highly enough. It's, let's see. It's over 10 pages of amazingly cited and sourced little quips and anecdotes that just prove the fallacy of the coincidence theorists out there, the mainstream media and the government, who would like you to believe that there's nothing more to see here. Move along, people. So make of that what you will. Now, here's a little video. I've collected so many songs over the years. There's been so many songs inspired by, written about 9/11. Of course, the hip-hop community has really taken hold of conspiracy theories, particularly as it relates to 9/11, and seemingly really has a penchant for speculating about mind control and Hollywood. But this one is was brought to my attention. I actually hadn't heard it before today, by the very same author as the Coincidence Theorist's Guide to 9/11, and that's Jeff Wells. And it's by I guess you would call him a folk musician named Rob Johnson. It's called 3 Minutes of Silence.
They said we ought to have 3 minutes silence. I thought the dead of two world wars only rate 2 minutes. But most of them didn't speak American. But most of them didn't speak American. They said we ought to have 3 minutes silence, but all that I could hear was all these voices screaming, and most of them didn't speak American. Most of them didn't speak American. I heard ghost voices from Hanoi, Hiroshima. Ghost voices from Beirut. Ghost voices from Baghdad. And the Secretary of State saying, this is a price worth paying. Half a million children dead in Iraq. That's a price worth paying? That's a price worth paying. They said we ought to have 3 minutes silence. Of course, Wall Street could only afford 1 minute.
Which reminds me. Do you remember when Bush appointed Henry Kissinger, of all people, to head the 9/11 commission? And thank God, I suppose, or some, thank Cthulhu, that he wasn't allowed to continue that. Why? Because, well, he was responsible for his own 9/11. That's right, folks. Chileans, they had their own 9/11 back in the 70s. And part of the fanfare for this anniversary are a number of articles from The Nation and Z Communications and elsewhere about the Chileans who have to confront their own 9/11. 40 years after Pinochet's coup, a historical presidential campaign has revived debates about his dictatorship and Washington's role in it. This one's by Peter Kornbluh over at thenation.com. And as I mentioned, there's another one over at zcommunications.org. September 11th, Chile, 1973. Chicago, 2013. 40 years of neoliberal attacks on our societies by Kim Skypes. You know, so again, there's so much information out there. Obviously there's a lot of, disagreement over the validity of this, that, or the other theory or a piece of evidence. You know, documentaries like Loose Change made a huge, effect on, Americans. There's so many, documentaries that were produced in the early days of the 9/11 truth movement, which, you know, really ushered in what I like to call iPod activism, where, you know, people were able to produce, you know, short, concise videos or just show people footage of World Trade Center 7 and say, did you know about this? You know, does this make sense to you? And while, again, not everybody agrees about whether there was controlled demolition, it really did herald a massive sea change in political activism. And of course, I do think that these movements were likely planned by the same plotters. If I am entertaining the possibility or probability that some cabal of neocons or, you know, globalists or covert op financiers or Saudis or whoever the hell it is that was really behind 9/11, it seems likely to me, as others have pointed out, like Fenton Dunn, that there was a plan to prepare the way for this new age of the internet. You know, with the JFK assassination, there was just not the foundation for the social media revolution and the spread, the viral propagation of these conspiracy memes. But I think definitely there were already white papers by people like Booz Allen Hamilton that were quite ready for the spreading of these ideas. I think the military-industrial complex and their intelligence agencies were quite well-versed in the spreading of lies and disinformation and the sowing of confusion, and I think there's been a lot of that. But, of course, on the other hand, you know, the relevance of the Situationists, the art movement from France, is not lost on me, and their idea of the spectacle and how images can be manipulated for a variety of reasons and agendas. And that does remind me that I was lucky enough to interview back several years ago the author of one of the first books on 9/11, and that is Lynn Bracken, who wrote The Shadow Government, 9/11, and State Terror. And his book, which came out either in early 2001, I think, was actually reviewed by the Village Voice in September of 2002. And I'll put the link up to his archive of their interview, but there was a little synchronicity for me when I was revisiting it today. In the last paragraph says, "The problem with conspiracy theories is that most of them are wrong." Well, I may or may not agree with that statement, but still, if the turbulent age-old story of statesmen conspiring to use terrorism to control their own populations can be believed, as Bracken successfully argues, then Shadow's thesis raises more chilling questions than it answers. Why should 9/11 be anomalous? As Twain once remarked, history never repeats itself, but it does rhyme. That was synchronistic for me because I just today liked on Facebook, that CIA NSA front organization, the Facebook page for Paul Thompson's 9/11 complete timeline. And I think the avatar right now is the image of Mark Twain with that quote, "History never repeats itself, but it does rhyme." I'll have to put up the link to the Lynn Bracken episode interview that I did as well. But, He did a book on Guy Debord, the father, grandfather, one of the main people behind the Situationist movement. And a number of people have suggested that certain weird elements within the wackier side of the 9/11 conspiracy truth movement factions may in fact be Situationists, or at least perhaps like Robert Anton Wilson and company. All hail Eris, Discordians. But that's another rabbit hole that we'll have to save for some other time. Meanwhile,
no, there was a lot of chaos. You saw the pictures of people running out of the White House and the lack of communication there. But, you know, the most amazing thing is maybe the way that day ended, because we had gone through the president's speech in the Oval. We'd gone through a National Security Council meeting. And then the chief of staff, Andy Card, and the deputy national security advisor, Steve Hadley, and I were sitting in my office. It was 11 o'clock at night. We were exhausted. And the Secret Service rushed in, and they said, "There's another plane headed for the White House." And they rushed us to the bunker again. And I got there, and the first thing I saw were the presidential dogs, Barney and Spot. And then the housekeeper, and then the president, who was in his shorts and T-shirt because he'd already tried to go to bed, the first lady, who was in her robe without her contacts, and the Secret Service came and said, "Mr. President, you'll have to sleep here." And they pulled out this moth-eaten sofa bed that I think had not been opened since the Cuban Missile Crisis. And the president took one look at it and he said, "I'm going to bed." And he turned on his heels and marched down. We behind him, and I thought, keep this picture in your mind. Nobody will ever believe that this is how 9/11 ended.
Yeah, old Condi. Nobody could have predicted, no one could have fantasized, no one could have conceived of planes being used as weapons when, in fact, even within the last 2 years before 9/11, there have been tons of instances where planes had been suggested as weapons, even by, the evil Al-Qaeda. Come on, give me a break. But just one of those weird, crazy stories from 9/11. So in my earlier clip, talking about paranormal aspects of 9/11, I've collected a lot of stories. You know, I know of at least four or five people locally who had precognitive dreams about 9/11. Well, maybe they weren't precognitive. Maybe some of them were clairvoyant. They occurred the morning of the events, and there didn't appear to be any way that they could have overheard their neighbors playing, you know, the radio or TV loud. There, in all the instances I'm aware of, they said there was no way for them to have heard any news about this, and yet their dreams seemed influenced by them. In fact, just today, another acquaintance of mine said, "On 9/11, I had a dream of being in an office building surrounded by plate glass windows and cubicles and desks. No people, just emptiness, interrupted by the shattering of glass and a wall of flames. I woke up shaken and went into the kitchen to make coffee, then turned on the television set just in time to see the second plane hit live. I crumbled to my knees with visions of an endless war." And, you know, these are just anecdotes, but, you know, I've come to learn about the, you know, the WebBots project of much fame and infamy, where they were doing massive data trawling of the internet and saw something was about to happen. And that is a whole other interesting rabbit hole. But it made me think, as I had thought for a long time, that things like the already existing premonitions registry would be a really great thing. That with the data analysis software out there, and with what we've known that the NSA has had for decades, it seems like they could have been data mining, you know, dream diaries online and seen, without even any standard intelligence, you know, any HUMINT or SIGINT, they could have seen that this was likely going to happen. And among the other locals here in Austin, Texas, who have claimed to have had precognitive dreams or visions about this event is Austin's own Alex Jones. Yep, that's right, folks. Back in May of 2006, I penned a brief article titled "The Precognitive Visions of Parapolitical Researcher Alex Jones." And I wrote, "Today marks only the second time this author has heard local radio show host, parapolitical researcher, and documentary filmmaker Alex Jones admit to his lifelong history of prophetic or precognitive dreams. On July 25th, 2001, I and countless other Central Texas cable subscribers watched Alex warn of the impending false flag terror attacks against New York City to be blamed on former CIA asset Osama bin Laden. Though Alex routinely avoids discussion of topics he considers new age or unprovable, preferring to stick to the facts reported in mainstream news sources, he did in fact state in his June 2003 interview with former Marine sniper Colonel Craig Roberts that not only has he, Alex, had premonitory visions in dreams, but that he specifically had a vision in the months before 9/11 that, combined with the mainstream news and behind-the-scenes intel he was receiving from insider sources, led him to make that dramatic July 25th broadcast that would soon thereafter prove prophetic. This admission came during a singularly anomalous interview with Colonel Craig Roberts that focused on Roberts' quote, extraordinary near-death experience and voyage to heaven. Alex Jones has continued to remain silent about his personal experiences with precognitive visions for the obvious reason that it would be used as just another piece of ammunition by his detractors to undermine his credibility. Alex routinely states, "I am not a psychic," without referencing his own personal experiences that have proven to him that prophetic dreams are in fact a reality. Today, he broke his own rules again and, after fully discussing the main topic he had planned for his two guests, began engaging one of those guests on the subject of the military psychic remote viewing programs. During this discussion with the military RV program's founder, Major General Albert Stubblebine III, Alex again admitted to his own personal experience with dream-based psychic functioning. Because the dialogue on the remote viewing subject began so late in the show, there was not enough time for Alex to adequately interview and investigate the claims of his guest. However, it was a great pleasure to once again have the protective layers Alex has built up around his own personal ESP experiences slip aside long enough to verify what we first learned back in 2004. And here, folks, is that 2003. Oh, I said 2004. Back in 2003, the original clip.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
You know, I talk about bills, documents, news articles. I go out and cover things myself. I read legislation. And I don't have one of these shows where we talk about ghost stories and flying saucers. I talk about real things, but shaping my life, I've had experiences. I'm not going to get any detail on this, maybe someday. I mean, this is the first show I've done like this in the 9 years I've been doing this. But I, from the time I was a child, and it only happens once every few years, will have a dream. I will tell people about the dream, vividly image it, and it will happen at a later date, a month, 6 months, a year later. And a lot of people ask, how did I know about 911? How did I get on the air? Never done this before. I said, call the White House, call Congress, tell them not to use bin Laden to attack New York as their patsy. And I had the evidence, I had the information, but frankly, folks, we never said this on the air. I had a dream where I saw the towers hit. Colonel Roberts, I didn't even share that with you in the car, but I just feel that I need to share this with people. Do you have any comments to what I've just said?
Well, you know, a lot of people are selected to receive premonitions. They're usually sensitive people, and you know, there's times when I developed kind of a sixth sense along that line. So yes, it's out there. I know in Vietnam, a lot of guys developed that what we call the jungle sense, where you knew ahead of time on a patrol at nighttime that down the trail was a tripwire or across the rice paddy was a sniper. You could just feel it. You just knew it. You didn't have to have information, but it happened ahead of time. You could see it in your mind's eye, so to speak. So that stuff does happen. A lot of people have dreams. My mother was, my grandmother were that way. They were very receptive to dreams that did come true later on. So this is something that's been reported through history. You know, like you say, it goes back thousands of years where people have had premonitions. They were big, they were called different things. They were called seers. They were called dreamers. They were called prophets sometimes, and even witches. But depending on what part of history you're in, the fact remains that I think God does give us information in a timely fashion to people to spread it out. We become the watchmen on the wall.
Well, I would think obviously too that there you know, the devil tries to do that with his minions, but he doesn't control the cosmos. He tries to manipulate events and will try to point his people in that direction.
Right. He's the guy that'll tell you the sky is red and you're supposed to believe it.
So look, I know there's so many Alex haters out there, and believe me, there are days where I am right there with you. But I've also defended him. You know, I'd like to think that he does more good than harm, but that's obviously a whole debate unto itself. But the fact remains, he is a huge voice in this fight for freedom, and especially has been leading the charge when it comes to the events of September 11th. There's so much more I'd like to talk about tonight, but obviously we're running out of time here. And, you know, I just remember, you know, shortly after September 11th and with the rise of Austin Parish Times, as I mentioned earlier, we, the collective, local folks, Chris Athanas, Jeff Contreras, and others brought people like Michael C. Rupert here to Austin to do a, I believe it was a 3-hour live video lecture on cable access TV, and I was lucky enough to be in the audience to that. We also saw him present the same presentation a few weeks or months later at the local Shriner College. That was pretty wild. And of course, among the many 9/11 conspiracy books I have, both wacky and down to earth, is the mammoth Michael C. Rupert book, Crossing the Rubicon, The Decline of American Empire at the Age of the End of Oil. Of course, for those who aren't familiar, Rupert went from being a L.A. cop to exposing CIA drug running in the inner city to publishing a newsletter that went out to hundreds of influential people, including congressmen, and began lecturing on 9/11 right after its events, and has since dropped off the face of the world, practically, as he pretty much predicted the end of civilization due to the peak oil issue. But a few final comments here. You know, I was looking back for through my records. I'm sitting here, folks, in a room heaping with about four or five drawers filled with the printouts of news and notes that I've acquired over the years related to September 11th. There's even more on UFOs and other stuff in other file cabinets. But in preparation for this, I just started unloading everything. And man, there's just so much information. I would implore everybody to look into these things. But in looking into for evidence of precog, good old Donald Rumsfeld's eerie 9/11 premonition. Now, maybe you'd throw Rumsfeld about as far as you'd throw, or trust him about as far as you could throw him or throw Alex Jones. But during a recent congressional hearing on the friendly fire death of football star Pat Tillman in Afghanistan in 2004, Representative John Micah gave new details about an 8 o'clock breakfast meeting held at the Pentagon the morning of 9/11 by then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. Micah told the hearing, which was attended by Rumsfeld, "I think on my dying day, I'll remember September 11th when I was with Donald Rumsfeld in the Pentagon for breakfast that morning. He invited me and a half dozen members of Congress, I think, over to the Pentagon. And the subject of the conversation Donald Rumsfeld was interested in was the military had been downsized during the 90s since the fall of the Berlin Wall. And what we were going to do about the situation is we had another, the word you, i.e. Rumsfeld, used was incident. I remember in the conversation sitting in the room right off his office for coffee that morning, and he was trying to make certain that we were prepared for something that we might not expect." Well, that doesn't have the quote I was expecting, but there you have it. So, we've also in the past, Mac White and I talked to military remote viewer Paul Smith. And during the course of that interview, I asked him about various claims by people like Gary Beckham that there may be evidence in past military remote viewing sessions of them accidentally remote viewing the 9/11 events. And in fact, going back through my notes, I found this Sharon Weinberger article from Wired.com circa 2007, Spooks versus Psychics, Who Predicted 9/11 Better? But of course, folks, I'm not asking you to believe in 9/11 conspiracy theory based solely on the alleged premonitions of Alex Jones or the alleged psychic remote viewing of former covert ops military remote viewers. I think it stands alone on the foreknowledge. The fact that there was so much information, and you can use this as an excuse to say, well, see, these people are inept. It's all just accident and thus coincidence. It's just You know, the ineptitude, but that's the limited hangout approach that has allowed them to always say, whoopsie, we need more money. You know, we didn't communicate enough amongst ourselves. We need more police state. We need more surveillance society. We need to tap your phones. We need to, you know, give up your civil liberty so that you can have security. No, folks, don't believe it. I don't think you actually do believe it if you're listening to this, but there may be folks out there who do. But look into these things for yourself. I would also add, you know, as horrible as the thousands of deaths were and the hundreds of thousands of deaths that have occurred due to the war of terror that we have waged around the world, stranger things happen, and some good occasionally can come of these things. And one good thing that came out of this for me was meeting the love of my life, who is now my wife. And perhaps not many people know this, but in the hunt for a layout design artist for the Austin Para-Times, my friend Russell brought to my doorstep one day a good friend and his girlfriend. And I remember opening the door that day and thinking, my God, if I am not careful, I will fall for this woman. And I was careful. And I didn't let my obvious affection interfere with that relationship. And we had a great working relationship with this artist, this layout and design artist. And who actually ended up being the creator of Weird Magazine, which ended up being run by said friend Russell Dowden, and which ended up being bought by Alex Jones. Weird story. But anyway, I would soon find out that the girlfriend, who eventually, after she had broken up with her friend, her boyfriend, and I would eventually start hanging out with and eventually start dating and eventually have a relationship with, she had purchased tickets to go to that 38th annual National UFO Conference. She had wanted to come and see Robert Anton Wilson. And our paths might have crossed at that conference. However, September 11th occurred, and the paths didn't cross. But because of those events, and because of the hate of so many redneck Texans in her small town, she was determined to leave that town and come to Austin, a much more liberal and interesting and weird place to live for someone growing up in this conservative state of Texas. And so in order to get away from the hatred, to get away from the hatred of the small town she was in, caused by 9/11, she moved to Austin and eventually crossed my path. And it's just a strange, strange world. So consider that. Unforeseen consequences, and there are sometimes positive outcomes. Not that I wish, you know, I certainly don't like the fact that so much pain and suffering has occurred as a precursor to this. But anyway, I'm going to wrap this up and say that, hey, coming up next week, we've got on this next Wednesday show, September 18th is going to be in my interview with Tim Banal of Banal of America. We're going to be talking about his show and all the great stuff that he does. And then the following week, September 25th, I'll be interviewing Doc Saul Ravencraft, who is the host of Journey into Twilight, another Austin-based show. He's an interesting fellow who does psychic readings, among other things. And then it's not 100% yet, but in October, probably October 9th, John Bush, another Austinite, will be talking about his show, Rise Up Radio, The Liberty Beat. And he's got a new one on, I think it's called the Sovereign Living Podcast. So more information on that coming soon. And in the meantime, folks,
us people,
stay friendly to each other. And good night.
We're 90% metaphor. with a leanness of meaning approaching hyperdistillation. And once upon a time, we were moonshine, rushing down the throat of a giraffe. Yes, rushing down the long hall, despite what the PA announcement says. Yes, rushing down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that it will always be there. It's part of a pair. There on the bow of Noah's Ark, the most prestigious couple just kicking back, parked against a perfectly blue sky on a morning beatific in its Indian summer breeze. On the day that America fell to its knees after strutting around for a century without saying thank you or please. And the shock was subsonic and the smoke was deafening between the setup and the punchline, because we were all on time for work that day. We all boarded that plane for to fly, and then while the fires were raging, we all climbed up on the windowsill, and then we all held hands and jumped into the sky. And every burrow looked up when it heard the first blast, and then every dumb action movie was summarily surpassed, and the exodus uptown by foot and motor car looked more like war than anything I've seen so far. So far. So far. So fierce and ingenious, a poetic specter so far gone that every jackass newscaster was struck dumb and stumbling over, oh my God, and this is unbelievable, and on and on. And I'll tell you what, while we're at it, you can keep the Pentagon, you can keep the propaganda, you can keep each and every TV that's been trying to convince me to participate in some prep school punk's plan to perpetuate retribution. Perpetuate retribution. Even as the blue toxic smoke of our lesson in retribution is still hanging in the air, and there's ash on our shoes. And there's ash in our hair. And there's a fine silt on every mantle from Hell's Kitchen to Brooklyn. And the streets are full of stories, sudden twists and near misses. And soon every open bar is crammed to the rafters with tales of narrowly averted disasters. And the whiskey is flowing like never before. As all over the country, folks just shake their heads. So here's a toast to all the folks that live in Palestine, Afghanistan, Iraq, El Salvador. Here's a toast to all the folks living on the Pine Ridge Reservation, under the stone cold gaze of Mount Rushmore. Here's a toast to all those nurses and doctors who daily provide women with a choice, who stand down a threat the size of Oklahoma City just to listen to a young woman's voice. Here's a toast to all those folks on death row right now, awaiting the executioner's guillotine, who are shackled there with dread and can only escape into their heads to find peace in a form of a dream. Peace in a form of a dream. Peace in the form of a dream. Cause take away our PlayStations and we are a third world nation, under the thumb of some blue blood royal son who stole the Oval Office and that phony election. I mean, it don't take a weatherman to look around and see the weather. Jeb said he'd deliver Florida, folks, and boy did he ever. And we hold these truths to be self-evident. Number one, George W. Bush is not president. Number two, America is not a true democracy. And number three, the media is not fooling me. Cause I am a poem heeding hyperdistillation, and I've got no room for a lie so verbose. Yeah. Yes, I'm looking out over my whole human family, and I'm raising my glass in a toast. Here's to our last drink of fossil fuels.